When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Hello.
Catherine McNamara.
Hello. How are you?
Hi. And Dominic Sherwood with this fake British accent.
I know. It's eventually the secret's going to come out and people are going to be curious.
You know, we were at least two or three episodes into my tenure before I knew you were from England. That was
really
the greatest acting of all. Yeah, because you stayed in character all day and you guys never invited me to socialize and party. So I never found out like the smoking drinking Dom with the fake. Literally the first time you did it, I said, fuck, you do a great British accent. I said, usually the Americans aren't as good on the British accent as the Brits are on the English. And it turned out that that's what was true. And I was the last to know.
So. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry.
Good on you, bro.
I'm sorry
no
to
apologies.
Have deceived
well
you.
Well done. Well done. I say you're a true pro. At least you were then.
And yeah, it's all
he
gone downhill
is.
Since then. It's a nightmare. Honestly.
Kat, how are you, lady? Look at you.
I'm good. I'm good.
Look at those lashes, for goodness sakes. Oh, my God.
All mine. Just a lot of mascara. Thank you. It's so good to see you. We, you know, when we started this podcast, you were obviously right there at the top of our list. We couldn't have done this without you. So thank you for being here today.
Oh my goodness. Well, I pressure's on then for I need some new jokes if that's the case, because I'm going to have to visit the other realm for some new material.
There you go.
I disagree. It was like number one question on my list to be like, we're talking to an Oscar winner. That's what's happening right now. We're talking to an Oscar winner.
You are first Oscar award winning guest, Miles.
Is that right? Am I? Yeah. Okay. Well, I hope I'm not the last.
I hope so too.
Keep the standards high, guys.
There we go. Well, you've certainly raised our standards quite a bit.
Unbelievable. Miles, why don't we start with your background, your history, how you got involved in the entertainment industry, and then we'll move on to some more Shadow Hunter-y stuff later on. But tell us a little about you. Tell the audience about you.
Where are you from?
Well,
how'd you dive in?
Well, my name is Miles Dale. I'm a producer, an overnight sensation after 35 years in the business. I got my start as a production assistant. I live in Toronto. I've continued to mostly work in Toronto, but you know, we go other places. And you know, for the last 10 years, I've been fortunate to have a great partner by the name of Guillermo del Toro. And we've made some what I consider to be memorable things together. And during that time period in, you know, the summer of love, the summer of 2015, I was fortunate enough to be able to hang with you guys and come and hopefully bring a resting heart rate to the first season of the show, which was it was a great summer, I gotta say. I had a great time.
It was a lot of fun.
We were so lucky to have you.
I think I was gonna say, we were very lucky to have experienced that 2015 the way we did.
Mm-hmm. But you came on right at a point where we were getting into kind of the thick of a lot of pivotal episodes of Shadowhunters and directed three of the most iconic episodes of season one.
Well, it's funny because, yeah, I didn't know a whole lot about the show. And I got a call to say, hey, you know, would you be interested in doing this, coming on as the producing director? And, you know, I had always been a producer. And at some point in my life, pretty early, I was like a baby line producer. I was maybe 30 on Friday the 13th. And one of the directors said to me, you know, you should really direct. And I said to him, you know, that is so nice of you to say that you think that I have like the tools and the skill set to be a director. He said, no, you need director empathy. Like, you need to know what we're talking about instead of just looking at your watch and saying it's time to go home and not knowing the coverage and all that. And so I really kind of took that to heart, because other producers had said to me even earlier in my 20s, when I was just sort of breaking in, that it's important for you know, any producer to sort of, not necessarily to do every job, although it's helpful, but to understand every job. So you understand the value of things. Like, if you spend time in the editing room, you know how editing works. If you spend time in wardrobe, you know what's important about costumes or hair or makeup or props or production design. So, you know, I asked a lot of questions of those people. And of course, working with directors, I said, okay, I'm going to go direct something. And so I think the first show, I was about 30, a show called Top Cops. And I convinced this guy, Sonny Grasso, who was the showrunner of The French Connection Cop. I was producing the show, line producing the show. And I said, you got to let me direct one. And I did, and it was fun and great, and I learned a lot. And then I just kept directing mostly episodes of my own shows, like on, you know, RoboCop, and then there was a show called FX and some other shows, and then did some other people's shows. And then we came to The Strain that we started in 2013, and I started doing, you know, episodes of that. You know, as you guys know, sometimes with a familiar face who knows what's happening, what, you know, every line of what every character has said in your character and your character, as opposed to the guy or the lady or the person who comes in for 3 weeks and is like a, not necessarily a journeyman director, but somebody who may not have the full context of the show. So right. I always felt directing on my own shows, it was fun, and I thought the cast appreciated it. And it just kind of made me better. So we had finished the second season of The Strain, and I got this call to come over with you guys. And I quickly familiarized, I think you were on show 5 at the time. And then I directed 7, 10, and then 13, which was the season finale where, as we all now know, Jace takes a potential turn to the dark side and hops on that boat, that crazy boat.
Boat.
That drone that I had to talk Don Carmody into getting after promising my firstborn. But so I got up to speed pretty quickly, and, you know, I hadn't read the book, so I got the mythology going. And really, you know, a first season is always a discovery process.
It is.
And
it's so explorative, for sure.
Yeah.
And you know, you're finding levels, you're finding character, you're finding chemistry, you're finding the look of the show. And it's this, a first season is seldom the best, because you're really, you know, finding what works and what doesn't. And so I really enjoyed that part of it. And I have to say, having normally, you know, producing shows that I might also be a producing director on, I loved not having all those other responsibilities, and not, even though I was cognizant of the money and the time and everything, I didn't have to worry about it. You know, all I had to worry about was, you know, the script and the shots and the, and all of that. And it was a really kind of a wonderful, it was a fun summer.
It
really was.
What people should understand, I think, about especially line producing is a big one. Like, I have learned that as soon as the line producer walks on set, shit's up. Like something's up. Like something. Something's it's like fire. We're running out of time, or we're running out of money, and we gotta start moving. And it just you see them coming from a distance. And you're like, we're about to get our wrists.
Yeah, I remember Greg would be rolling in, and I'm like, Greg, save your breath. Like you're singing my song, brother. I know where you live. But you know, we got it all reasonably done. I have to say, you guys were so great though, because. You know, you were really eager, you know, and you had great chemistry, and you were friendly with each other, and you committed to the material, and you knew your lines, and you knew the physical stuff. So I got to tell you, that makes it so much easier, you know, for me, because those were kind of challenging days. Like a lot of what we were doing with, you know, whether it's out in the Sealy forest with those crazy candles and a lightning storm or whatever, it's just helpful to be able to say, guys, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to approach it. And you were always just so, willing to take that journey. So it was fun for me. Look, the whole crazy thing was, it's like how many times, and I got lucky because I got your first kiss, which is pretty awesome, which I looked at it again. And it's so funny with the way this rock video music crashes in on the kiss.
It's so great.
And Matt and Amaro just head for the hallway, right? It was so funny.
And the circling cameras.
Moments after you had stabbed, you know, Jace in the gut. And then, you know, the monster was looking like he was going for a kiss too. There, you know, but that was pretty hilarious. And then, of course, in the next episode, number 10, Major Arcana, we get to go to the other world where you guys get to kiss again, but not in... Mm-hmm. No, you know, where Clary's like, what's going on here? And I think I'm liking it. But the Sealy guy warned me that things could get carried away. And the tingling that I'm feeling is me getting carried away.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Is this PG or PG?
No, not at all.
This is whatever we want to do.
Adult talk. There was tingling.
Yes.
So anyway, that was pretty funny, that whole going into that world and you know, Alice in Wonderland, which was like a nice kind of Disney thing. And remember, we had those crazy machines at that party.
Yeah, the photo booth things and all that jazz.
The photo booth. Yeah, we should have had that at the wrap party, not just on set. I thought that was a real mistake on behalf of production. Anyway.
We need it for reshoots at the end of the season.
There was real world kissing, and then there was fake world kissing. And then there was dematerializing in the closet face to face with that whole thing. And so I just remember all that fun kind of sexual tension between your two characters, which was great, you know. And then the end, like the big sacrifice that Jace makes at the end to go off with Valentine. So I really thought I got some juicy shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I hope we made the most of them.
Well, so that's what I was gonna say. You know, what's interesting about when you get something that you're like, oh, we have three episodes that are actually quite prominent in the story on paper, is then it's sort of, then there is a gauntlet laid down on the director. And I think a lot of audience members don't necessarily see that unless you're in the sort of, you know, even the Guillermo or the Tarantino level, where you're like, well, this is a Tarantino movie or this is a Guillermo movie. And you're like, we are expecting a very specific type of thing from this. But that responsibility always comes to the director, no matter who you are or what, whether it's a show or a movie or whatever it is. A lot of that responsibility comes down to the director. And we have to tip our caps to you because you did an amazing job. I will tell you a funny story. So I don't think I even ever told you this. So when we're filming episode 13, there's a point in Jace gets that he's trying to get hold of Clary and her phone is like off or in a dead zone for whatever reason. And he can't do it, so he just takes off running.
Because the script demanded it, Dom.
Because it would have been too easy if cell phones work when we need them.
Because the script said so. So anyway, he takes off running. And one of my best friends in the world is there on set that day, Alex Kinsey. And we do a couple takes of it. And I come over and we say, yeah, we're done with that scene. We're going to move on. Yeah, great. I come over and Kinsey goes, hey, man, are you sure you're done with that scene? And I'm like, yeah, they just said we're done with that. We're going to move on to the next thing. He's like, are you sure? And I'm like, yeah, why? And he goes, no, it's nothing. It's not a big deal. You just make a funny face when you run. And I'm like, what? What do you mean? I make a funny face when I run? And he's like, yeah, you just make like a kind of a face. It's not a big deal because it's done now, but you make a funny face. And literally as he's saying the last face, it was either you or Pierre goes, hey, Dom, we need one more. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this now. Like, what do I do?
Paranoid.
I'm so paranoid. Either way, neither the funny face nor the face I tried to control.
Is this like the Tom Cruise fake grimace face?
I don't know. I don't know what it was. Either way, didn't end up in the show.
Is this when you were running behind the studio, right?
Yeah.
We did that in the back of the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember your face was really rough. Yeah. We had to. I think we had to fix that with visual effects, as I recall.
Yeah. Brutal.
Well, by the way, that's obviously a good friend or a guy who likes pranking you right there.
He's a good friend, for sure.
That's both. That's Alex Kinsey, who wrote the music for our podcast.
A great friend would have told me after take one. That's what he would have done. He would have told me after take one, he had a chance to fix it.
Pulling you along there.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for not sharing that, but I'm sure that for us it was focus or something trivial and had nothing to do with your otherwise impeccable performance.
We'll see. True. I don't know about that.
You're just so committed.
I'm going to rewatch now. I'm going to rewatch in slow motion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, really go for it, whatever's happening.
But
I don't know.
The Tom Cruise run, too, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you got to do the Tom Cruise.
That thing.
Yeah.
I'm now super paranoid about it. I'm at the gym today on the treadmill, and I'm like, what does my face look like? I have no idea. I need to figure this out.
Yeah. I think you should tell your trainer, I want to do running in front of a mirror. For my next workout, right?
Has to be in front of a mirror.
Yeah. And record it like with your golf swing. Get him to record it.
Yeah. And really, that's going to get me a great reputation as an actor, by the way. Every time I go to a trainer, I'm like, record me in front of a mirror here. That's what I need.
I have to workshop my running face. Right. This is what I'm workshopping.
Who's the guy in the gym
week?
With all the lights around him?
Just we ignore him. We just let him do his thing.
Mug it and running. Mug it and running.
Oh,
man,
alive. It's horrendous.
Oh yeah. But that was a fun show. And what was fun about every one of those shows was that they were all kind of, different, when we went into that. I loved the second one where we went into that other world through the portal, and it was a whole different thing and it gave you guys a chance to stretch out in these sort of other, personas that might have been you. So I thought that was, imaginatively written. And I will say back to your comment, Dom, about it all being in the hands of the director. I felt lucky, Ed, who was the showrunner in the first season, pretty much, I wouldn't say he left us alone, but more than usual, because having been on the other side of all kinds of series television, oftentimes the showrunners and the writers are on top of you a lot more, as you guys know, and there isn't that same level of freedom and sometimes you're in a box and sometimes you're not, but I certainly felt having been on the other side of it. And we always try to run our shows, whether it was the Strain or certainly this recent show that we did, an anthology, as really director friendly and giving a bit more leeway to the directors to see what you can find. And if someone goes off piste, as happens from time to time, you correct, but at least you have a chance to see what they've got in mind and what they can bring, so yes, it'll be within the general confines of the visual style. But like with our show, and again, talk about episode 10, like that show called for a very different visual style. So I remember we shot it differently. We did the color differently. Some of the transitions were different, where it wanted to feel like a different, world. So it's nice to be able to have that freedom. And certainly I felt that when we were doing the shows.
Well, absolutely. And to your point, Miles, too, a lot of that is part of the magic of Shadowhunters and of how that production was run. And a lot of that's due to folks like you. You let every department do their job and have their own creative space. And it became such a collaborative set because everyone, there was a clear vision, but everyone was allowed freedom within that vision to bring their interpretation of it and work together to do so. And it created, from the actors to the script to the production design and the costumes and everything, this world where when we have an episode and go, okay, we know our world, now let's turn it on its head and do everything different, everyone gets excited all over again because you get to have that sort of creative impetus all over. And so that's a credit to you to allowing us all to kind of do that.
Well, it starts on the page. It always starts on the page. But the good news is the source material was great. The writers, I think, adapted it really well. And it gave us a great kind of springboard to say, okay, what can we do visually? Well, there's a lot of opportunity, for visuals, in terms of some of the creatures. Like I was looking at, again, the little spider guys that were chasing you through the tunnels. I forget what they were called, but you know, those were great.
Like, I remember that because it was a football. It was a Nerf ball. Do you remember? That's what we had on the day was a Nerf ball. And that was my first experience at I've had experiences before. I have to imagine something that isn't there is there, but I've never had to imagine something that is there is something else there. I've never had that before. So that was an interesting one.
I was watching it again too. I don't know if you remember the Sealy dude where he's doing his little dance at the portal and stuff. He was doing that whole thing. And I just remember we're standing there in the woods. And if everyone looked and saw this guy going like, you know, like this, and like this, is like somebody's like the mushrooms are kicking in, you know, on that guy. Sure. It was one of those things where, you know, you look at it with all the swirly twinkle and it looks pretty good. But it was, I think I probably said to him, look, I know this feels ridiculous at this moment, but you'll thank us later.
It's gonna
be fun. That was a common occurrence on Shadowhunters. I mean, a few episodes prior to you coming on, we had our first big werewolf fight in all the shipping containers. And that was Pierre running around with a tennis ball and a stick going, another over here, another down here, and there's another one over here. And we're all trying to, you know, keep a straight face through it all.
Pierre loves his tennis balls.
He loves his tennis balls. We had a couple of demons come in that were just very in shape stunt people in head to toe green morph suits with sort of sticks again for like eye line and whatever. And I'm just sort of jealously looking at abs through this, like through this skin tight suit. Like this is actually making this very difficult to focus for me. Actually, if you could have had someone who was in medium shape, that would have been great. But you brought in a bodybuilder.
If that's how you felt, you can imagine how I felt. I'll get you a Kleenex, buddy.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. It's a literal pro, and it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years, and not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
So, but you do. It's 9 o'clock here and I'm childish and I'm going to let that joke slide.
That's okay.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Thanks very much. You do a lot of supernatural work or otherworldly work, I guess, with obviously The Shape of Water. Congratulations again.
Thank you.
What do you think it is that draws you to that sort of, I mean, it's obviously your partnership with Guillermo, but like what is it that you find so entrancing about things like Shadowhunters, things like The Shape of Water, where there is this fantastical feel to them?
Well, I think it just takes you to other worlds, and certainly you know, you can deal with things, you know, metaphorically and allegorically, which sometimes is more interesting than straight up the middle. I mean, I'm just generally attracted to good material, even though, you know, a lot of the stuff that I've done with Guillermo, from Mama to The Strain to Shape, I'm just drawn to good material, a good story, and good storytelling. But I think it gives you that kind of material, just gives you the ability to come at it from a different angle, say some things in a different way. I mean, ultimately, you know, a lot of these things are thematically similar, you know, in terms of their good versus evil, you know, the things that they're trying to say, the things that, you know, right from wrong, all those things, human relationships and how we see them. And, you know, for Shadowhunters, it was just, it was a different kind of challenge, you guys as young adults growing up. And it was not really dissimilar to the kinds of challenges that, you know, teens and young adults face today. It's just a different venue, you know, with slightly higher stakes. I know that sounds incredibly simplistic, but really, I think that for an audience, it's relatable in a way, because it's the relationships, it's the romance, it's the parental issues that you have. I mean, you could think about Valentine and Jocelyn essentially as just, you know, as a kid, as a if you were a child of divorced parents, you know, you could actually relate to that, you know, taking sides in a broken home. So, you know, really, I think you could look at some of those things and just find anyone, certainly of a younger age, can find something to relate to in there. And I think it's the same with The Shape of Water. I mean, it just tells a story about, you know, the people who are in power, who are inherently sort of corrupt, and the people who are underserved and without agency and without voice, whether, you know, it's a mute cleaning lady or a gay man, Richard's character, and how they see the world and how they, they treat the world, and how the world treats them. So in a way, a lot of it comes down to, you know, the basics of those kinds of themes of human behavior and emotions and everything else. And it's just the venue that we set them in. So for me, if it's an inventive construction that way, something new that we haven't maybe seen before, or different, or just a story well told that resonates, that's kind of the thing that draws me.
Well, absolutely. And we talk about that a lot on the show. You know, we've had a chance to go all over the world and do Comic-Cons and meet the Shadow Fam in person and all of this. And that is something that always strikes people, is, you know, we tell the story about vampires and werewolves and shadow hunters, and yet they're going through such human things. It gives people a chance to connect and relate and sort of look at their own lives objectively for the first time sometimes, and see other perspectives as well. And that's, I think that's, you know, the point of what we do. We want to just tell stories and hold that mirror up to the human experience and, you know, make a couple's first kiss look like a rock music video sometimes.
Speaking of, that we would be remiss if we didn't talk more about this, because Kat and I have talked about this at length at every Comic-Con. It's the question we get asked: what is it like filming a kiss, especially a kiss so sort of iconic already in the storylines? And my answer is always the same: it's not as romantic as you think. There's a lot,
the least romantic, a lot of people involved
in this, because we remember, or Kat and I have spoken about this, what we remember a lot of is the angles of the cameras being a certain way. So we would be mid makeout and hear a okay and turn, and we'd have to
switch,
tilt our heads the other way, and then tilt our heads
lean
back
on
this
your
way.
Right foot.
Dad, can you move your left eye to the right?
So romantic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, look, imagine sex then. I mean, I've got this Netflix series, Sex Life, that's on now, where, that's my show. But so, I mean, you talk about technical, that can get very, and you know, with intimacy coordinators now.
So now we should talk about that, because this is a sort of brave new world. I've had an intimacy coordinator twice now. And they're, for anyone who doesn't know, their job is to provide basically a safe talking space when you're performing something intimate with a partner. Or even sometimes without a partner, it's to provide a safe space for the performer and for everyone else on set to make sure that they feel comfortable with everything that's going on, basically, is their job. But this didn't exist 5 years ago, 6 years ago, this just, it wasn't a thing. It was just, and it's now sort of a safety protocol.
It was really a post Me Too.
Correct.
Kind of when it came in. Yeah.
I mean, post Shadowhunters for us.
You know, so it was a needed thing.
And rightly so. Look, I think that over the years, some people have taken liberties, whether it be directors or producers or, you know, actors, where the power dynamic may have been in favor of an older male star who was working with a younger, you know, I mean, Last Tango in Paris, you know, famously many things over the years. But, you know, I think it's a welcome addition. And I think as performers, you guys would know better than me to be able to at least say, hey, you know, here's how I feel about this. And, you know, if he could, you know, put his hand here instead of here, I'd be more comfortable. And the best intimacy coordinator are certainly worth their weight in gold, because they are additive, they're helpful communicating, and they don't get in the way. You know, sometimes you'll get the power hungry one that's all sort of driving it. And you know, I've had great experiences, and I've had experiences that have not been as good.
Interesting.
But I think for you guys, it can't be a bad thing. Because if everything's fine, it's like, you know, we did a scene with, you know, Bradley Cooper and Toni Collette on the last movie, and there was going to be some kissing and this and that. Now, they're both very experienced actors at the top of their game, and I offered them both, and they just said, yeah, no, we're fine, right? Yeah. So, but it depends. That's not always the situation. And with, and certainly with younger people who are less experienced in this, I think it's going to be, you know, helpful, because you never know what's going to happen. And you don't want it to A, get weird, or B, you know, derail, or C, create, you know, relationship issues. So, look, I felt like it was perfectly natural. You guys are both very kissable. So, asking you to kiss was just easy to do. I said, I can see this. I can imagine this in my head. Yeah. So action, you know?
There also, there comes with a comfortability, and Kat and I on this show talk a lot about safety and the feeling of safety, which not only comes from, you know, Kat and I's dynamic with each other, but also from people like you, from people like Pierre, from the crew that we have around us, who do make us feel safe and who make us feel seen and heard if we do have any grievances. Because you're right, like if there is, like, you know, a leering, or if there's any sort of like weirdness on set, then it does make those situations a little uncomfortable. And, you know, it comes from the head, and you were the captain of the ship when we were doing that, and it was our first big one, and it was comfortable. It did feel safe, and there's nothing more I can say about that. That's the be all and end all.
That's really the kind of the leadership responsibility, and you know, hopefully everybody is in that space, you know. An actor, and this is testing the PG-13 of it all, but an actor who shall remain nameless said to me, you know, he used to go into those scenes pre-intimacy, and he would say to the lady that he was in the scene with, he said, I just want to let you know, if something happens down there, it's nothing personal. And if nothing happens down there, it's nothing personal. It's
nothing personal.
And that was the version of an intimacy coordinator in the 90s. Yeah.
Right.
And I need you to sign here, here, and here. So look.
Well, to be fair,
but anyway, it's better now, and we didn't have that, you know, too much of that going on. Look, I thought that the show was also a little bit, if not ahead of its time, certainly progressive in the story between Matt and Harry's characters.
100%.
I thought it really dealt with that, you know, kind of head on, which was nice, you know, at a time when not everybody was doing that. So I really felt like, you know, everything was pretty organic in that way. And as a guide for young adults, I thought it was kind of pretty healthy in the relationship department, in terms of sort of truthfully expressing, you know, the kinds of things that are going on in those people's lives. And again, maybe some LGBTQ kids who were out there watched the show and thought, okay, you know, this is these guys, these superheroes.
We've heard that from the mouths of fans since then.
We hear that time and time again.
Yeah, we hear it a lot.
And that was 5 years ahead of the first Marvel gay character, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. So. Yeah. What's so lovely about it is that we, you know, we get to do what we love for a living. We get to play make-believe and tell stories and do all of this. But the fact that it means something to someone and it can provide some sort of solace or answer or maybe just even a new perspective to someone out there in the world. It's the biggest gift and it's the most humbling thing I think about this show and why we've all stayed so connected and why the Shadow Fam is what it is. And we've all kind of, the show is stuck with so many of us for a lot of reasons.
Well, that's great that you hear that from the fans at the fan events, because, you know, it means that you really did have an effect. And, you know, at the end of the day, entertainment is one thing. But being able to move people and have stories that resonate with an audience just beyond entertainment value, I think is something that's pretty noble, you know, and if you can do that, you're doing, you know, something more than just entertainment value. So I really, you know, respected the show and its writing, you know, for that part of it.
Well, you helped to establish so many of the kind of pivotal moments of season one, but also parts of our world. The first time we went to the Seelie Court was in episode 10. And the first time
with
we
those
got
candles,
to the,
it was candles,
the,
right?
Yeah.
It was
that
like
was yeah, the snow candles.
Thing. They're probably illegal
that.
By now.
Yeah.
So well,
I'm
well,
sure.
And do you remember the storm that day? There was a crazy storm too.
Yeah,
it was like
that.
Lightning, I think, hit a tree about 20 feet from us.
So I actually know this because my family was there. My mum, my stepdad, and my little brother were there. And my stepdad's a big rugby playing guy, you know, big tough dude. And comes rushing into my trailer like sheet white. And I'm like, what's going on? And he was like, lightning just nearly killed me. And I was like, I don't know if it nearly killed you. But sure enough, it was like 20 feet away, just like struck the ground. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It was killing lightning for sure. So no, I had said to the special effects guys, we're looking to do something magical in the Seelie Glade. So the guy showed me a couple things and I was, is that legal? He goes, well, this is legal for now. So, and it was these candles and these candles. And you remember it created like, it was like the worst version of pollen, but it was great. And you know, now you would just do that with visual effects, you know, without a doubt. And it would be an easy cycle. But you know, this was 7 years ago now. So I remember there was like an army of like four or five dudes, you know, standing in the you know woods with
the candles.
Yeah, and the fans, exactly.
It's like airplane operators, just, you know.
It looked great.
Listen, season two, we ended up using like pussy willows, like handfuls and handfuls of these like dandelion.
You can't say that anymore. They've renamed it. Is HR
the name
on
of the flower?
It's
the name of the flower. or get in real trouble. It's the name of the flower.
It's
these like dandelion
spores.
Type things.
Right.
And they just blew bags and bags and bags of them into the room. And we're doing these like screaming scenes and whatever. And I was blowing.
Inhaling.
Yeah. I was blowing.
I blew
these,
them
like,
out of my
pollen
nose.
Things
for about
out of
a
my
week.
Nose for days. Yeah. It was horrendous. I would take snow candles.
What you do for your art, guys. What you do for your art.
Oh, it's true. But they were also like glitter and they never went away. You know, 10 episodes later, we would find them in our everything.
In your ear or something. Yeah.
Somewhere you didn't want them to be. There's your PG-13.
You know, but there's always that element on set. It just depends on the set, whether it's, you know, snow candles or I just did a Western pilot and dust. Oh my gosh, dust everywhere.
Yeah. Hey, look, you know what? That's what we do. We make magic. Yeah. So, you know, the guys tried a few things and it looked great. Again, I watched that again a little while ago and it looks great. And it does feel like a different place, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I credit the special effects guys with staying with something that is only semi-harmful.
Yeah, well, okay. So as a director, how do you sort of, not the semi-harmful aspect of it, but what goes into making those sort of decisions? Because obviously we live in a world today where practical and special effects, practical and visual effects rather, there's the great debate. And so how do you go about kind of making those choices and picking and choosing your moments as a director?
Right. Well, I'm joking about the semi-harmful because, you know, there are very straight rules that we talk about. So, you know, there used to be various kinds of water-based, oil-based smokes that are gone. You know, spectral smoke, which is gone. Water-based smoke now is pretty easy. So we look at the MSDS of the, you know, the rules and what the government health organizations say. And generally, you know, we'll find something. But I think more and more, I have to say, the, you know, the tilt has gone from practical to the effects. I mean, now, you know, I mean, one of the best examples as an example is squibs. I don't know if you guys have ever had them, but, you know, there are these things, you know, when you get shot, you know, they put a new shirt on and they've got the squibs on your chest and they've got little blood bags in them. And you go and, you know, you'll hear the director go, and you're shot. One, two, three. And the squibs will go one, two, three. And then, okay, cut. Now go back to wardrobe, take off your shirt, take off the squibs, reload the squibs, reload the wardrobe, back on the set a half hour later. If you do three takes, it's an hour and a half. Now, of course, you've got a before and after shirt. You get shot. Visual effects does the hits with the beautiful blood spray. And now cut. Okay, throw on the after shirt and you're done. You know, again, we just had on Nightmare Alley, there was this pit of snakes. I don't know if you guys have seen the film, but in
no, not yet. Don't give anything away. I'm really excited to watch it. I'm
okay,
it's
well, the,
a date
the
night
snake
movie.
Thing will not give, this won't give much away.
Okay.
So there's a carnival and there's a geek pit, and it was like Guillermo was like, okay, I want snakes in the bottom of the geek pit, real snakes. And I said, okay, well, Guillermo, that's okay. But A, we've got Paul Anderson. You might know Paul Anderson, British fellow from Peaky Blinders, who's going to be in the geek pit. He might step on one. He might get bitten by one. The snakes are incredibly expensive. And by the way, they don't move much when it's cold. And it was cold.
Oh.
So we brought the snakes over one day, just as a point of really proof for me. And as predicted, Paul was like, I don't know about those snakes. And they didn't move. And so it was like, pack up the snakes. And now, you know, we see in almost every shot, there's like a visual effects snake. We threw some rubber snakes in there. By the way, if you guys want rubber snakes, I've got like a box of 50.
So sure.
Give me a mailing address. I'll send a rubber snake. But, you know, all those shots ended up being VFX snakes, whereas back in the day, it would have been real snakes. So there's all kinds of stuff now where there's a reason why visual effects is a rapidly expanding business, and that's because it's just, it might be a little more expensive, but it saves you time on set. Usually there's a safety factor that goes along with that. So, you know, we've really learned to embrace it. I mean, Guillermo was a big, you know, he started as a makeup artist, and he was a big practical FX guy. And increasingly, you know, we've been doing a lot more with VFX, and certainly the final brushstrokes. Like if you look at The Shape of Water, you know, the creature, Doug Jones' character had, you know, he's got a suit on and everything, but all the micro expressions, the blinks, the eyebrow raises, the little facial expressions that really are the nuances of the character and you know, how he was sort of feeling at a given moment, that was all VFX. So there's so many applications, and it's been nice to be able to sort of explore that and grow with the business where you can, you know, start to make your own decisions about what will be better or more efficient time-wise in terms of
Well, and
creatively
effects. You get more choices as well with a lot of it, right? Like
exactly
what you were just saying, you know, if you put Paul in a pit of snakes, I know for me as an actor, there are other things that I'm worried about right now, other than just performing the scene that needs to be performed. Like I'm worried about getting bit by a snake. Like this is a real concern that I now have.
Or stepping on a snake, Dom.
Or stepping on a snake, of course.
Care about the animals,
of course, right? Well, and also that would probably lead to me getting bit, so it's going to hurt everyone. That's not going to. Nobody's going to love
wins.
That.
Nobody wins.
Nobody wins in
that scenario.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
I do think there is a time for practical effects. I think the one we're going to see disappear soonest is guns, live gunfire. I think live gunfire is a thing of the past, you know.
Mm-hmm. Look, I'll say this. There's no reason for practical gunfire at this point. I'll actually tell you, there's an interesting on this anthology series we just did. Mm-hmm. We had a scene where a guy was supposed to fire a fully automatic machine gun at a creature, at nothing in particular. Mm-hmm. And everyone was obviously very nervous. But in our case, it was because it was in extreme slow motion, mm-hmm. and all the casings were going to be flying out of this gun. And forget about the muzzle flash, but that's one mm-hmm. thing. So we talked about whether to do it or not, and we have a great gun wrangler, our guy Charlie, mm-hmm. and we decided to do it. You know, obviously we cleared the set and everything else, but typically we won't. There's absolutely no reason for live gunfire, especially in the day. I will say at night you get a little bit of, you still do your muzzle flashes, but you get mm-hmm. a little bit of reflective light mm-hmm. on the actor's face. Mm. But there's really no reason to do it. You don't really see, and muzzle flash, I mean, those are $300 VisFX shots. They're the easiest shots, literally really? An 8-year-old could do those things.
Wow.
Yeah, because think about it. It's just the barrel of the gun for three uh-huh. frames. You've got your little star thing that you've already got in the machine, and you just go, and that's it.
Wow.
Like, it's the simplest thing you could do. So I think you're right. I think that, I mean, any gun safety is going to go up, and I think that live gunfire, there's a movement right now to just get rid of it completely. I don't know that that's going to happen, but I mean, certainly that will end up being a sort of a climactic transitional moment in the history of movie guns. Sadly.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how it works out. I mean, I just did an action movie and we had a lot of live gunfire, and we had an incredible gun wrangler team. One of the guys who could like count to the number of the rounds from a fully automatic gun, and he'd come back and be like, I think you fired 15. He'd be like, no, you fired 14. Pull out the magazine, and sure enough, there's one still in there. And you're like, wow, that's mind-blowing. So it was never a point that I didn't feel safe with them. I felt great with them. But the thing I noticed that I couldn't get rid of, me, Dom, as a human being, was the blink reaction to every time a gun fires.
Yeah.
Because it's loud, and it's a big sort of, it's an energetic reaction that happens. My character wouldn't have blinked. He was an ex-Navy SEAL and he's a U.S. Marshal. Like, he wouldn't have blinked. So I don't know how we got around it, because I think they did some sort of clever editing with it. But I physically couldn't stop myself from doing that. As much time as I spent at the range trying to nix that reaction, I couldn't do it. And obviously with a VFX shot, that wouldn't happen, because you don't get... I think people forget that blanks are still as loud as bullets. Louder
sure.
in some cases. Like, you know, we wear ear protection. Everyone on the crew has to have ear protection in when guns are being fired, because it's it's loud. It's really dangerously loud. It'll do some real damage to it.
On the other kind of funny side is that you'll get guys who go and they shoot machine guns and there'll be no rounds in them. It'll be effects and you'll see their mouth going, go, 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 go. It's like,
you did it, Kat.
I did the same thing. I did the same thing, but with swords and my portal. Because I clearly ended up doing portals and I would go every time.
Right.
But I try so hard not to move my mouth. I couldn't. I couldn't not.
I get it.
You're like the total package, Kat. You are your own sound effects machine. It's phenomenal.
I try. I provide my own Foley on the day, you know?
It's a pretty common thing. I've heard stories of like the Spider-Man underneath the mask going every time. And the sound guy's like, we can't even see it. Like, there's no reason for you to be doing this.
Right. If it makes you feel better, we don't care. Don't do it. Yeah. That's right.
Well, we get to feel like, you know, kids playing in the middle of a forest with swords and portals and magic all over again. So I think sometimes we all just get caught up.
You guys are great with the swords. You know, that was also my concern. Just those freaking swords flying around, man. I mean, I had a thing with Mary Elizabeth Winstead on The Thing, or on Scott Pilgrim, rather, where she got nicked with a sword right up here. And it's like, the soft swords, you know, and the plastic ones. But you guys really trained the crap out of yourselves. I mean, it was good training.
You'll be happy to know that season two, the training escalated, as did the swords. So there were no more snapping at the hilt swords. There were no more like chipped like bits of plastic and battery going everywhere. The caveat there was there were these very sort of impressive looking like beautifully silver cleaver style weapons. Again, in the cold, so they're very flexible, this sort of rubber.
Even the rubber ones,
and then in the cold, they would sort of almost freeze. They would harden. So then when you get hit in the finger or whatever, which happens, you're like, wow, that really fucking hurt.
Feels like a sword.
Feels like a sword. Yeah.
But, you know, credit to Drew, our set medic, because he would sneak us, you know, bags of ice and liquid bandage for all of our split knuckles and bruises and everything else. And because, you know, Dom and I were in it. We trained so hard. We wanted to keep fighting. And it's just, if you choose to do your own stunts, that kind of thing is just, it's an occupational hazard, really.
I'd have been asking, where are the season one Fisher Price swords?
Every time you get nicked, you're like, actually, I didn't mind them. Bring them back. I didn't hate them that much.
Take two with the old sword, please.
No, it was nice, though, to have the freedom to actually hit the swords together and to be able to fully kind of extend all those things instead of having to be careful of these fiberglass swords.
Right.
But
a real clang. Clang.
Yeah. Making the noise of seeing
But the training showed, because I mean, as you guys know, it doesn't just happen. That's all highly choreographed and there's no like going in on the day and just doing it. So I was always pretty impressed by that. You know, guns are easy, swords are hard.
Yeah.
Well, it's all about safety and about training and about, you know, having the knowledge that you need to know and having the team around you that will, you know, train you and teach you and give you those skills. Because half of being an actor, as you know, both of you know, is learning very quickly how to look as though you're a master at something that you know nothing about. Yeah. And hopefully learning some skills in the process.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But what a great thing for you guys to do like early in your careers is to be able to get that done, you know, instead of just, you know, yakking. It's important because now you know the difference between the pros and the amateurs. You know, when you're working with someone who's a good wrangler or a good trainer or a good anything, you know the difference. So I feel like the training on that show was actually at a pretty high level.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You're so right. Actually, we learned a huge amount from Shadowhunters. Not just the physical elements, but you know, both of us being at sort of the infancy of our careers, the things we learned from people like yourself, the things we learned from Pierre, from Celik, from the ADs, from the hair and makeup departments, from the costume departments,
camera operators,
everything.
That's something that Shadowhunters taught me so much by working with directors like yourself. And it's sort of how I've always approached work anyway, but it sort of applies to any aspect of our industry, in that you do all the prep work, but inevitably you get to set, something's going to go wrong. Something, so it's going to be some unknown element, but without that preparedness and without, you know, a director like you on hand who knows so much and has done all the prep, you're sort of lost at sea. But having that flexibility to play jazz a little bit with creatives that you trust is wonderful.
There's the version of things going wrong, like whether it be weather or something like that. And then there's just the version of discovering something better. You know, what's always important to me, again, is like with you. And by the way, you guys were very accommodating. You know, I mean, there are many actors who are going to challenge every little thing that you say, typically older actors. Gene Hackman, I'm talking about you. And if you are for me to be able to give the actors space to, you know, for, certainly, you know, question anything in terms of the script, the staging, you know, why would I go here and do this? Why would I do that? Or just the intent of anything or a better idea. Like, I love that part of it. And I feel like the actors do too, because they just, you know, you feel like you're more, you know, a part of it with some meaningful input, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You feel trusted. You feel heard in that moment. And even if for whatever reason it doesn't go, you know, the way you had thought it out in your head or the way you'd planned it, because we'd get the descriptions of the sets. So we sort of unless they're sets that we've been to 100 times, we know sort of like, yeah, we're going to walk in, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. But we've sort of got this image in our head of like, yeah, I've walked around my apartment and I've done this scene and I know sort of vaguely how I've stepped into it. And to have someone who is in charge, you know, the collaborating boss, as it were, to come in and say, we're interested in hearing your thoughts on this. It actually, for me, as someone who sort of can feel a little self-conscious about these things sometimes, having someone in that position of power giving me that opportunity really did raise my confidence level for the scenes that we had to walk into. And either way, however we end up with it, we end up discussing it and having a thing that we're all happy with as a group, as a team, which is a really, I think, a hugely beneficial feeling to have on set.
Well, that's just it. Everyone has ownership.
A happier set where you guys are feeling valued, and it's not something, you know, the last thing you want to hear is, look, I'd love to explain it to you, but we got to go. A line reading is the worst possible version of any of that. So, yeah, I mean, to me, like, that's the thing that you want to be able to do, is to just give, you know, let it be a little more sort of democratic that way. And you know, usually that works out, because usually you will find something that's better. Oh, the other thing I was just thinking about, which was great, not just the kissing, but one of my other favorite things from that show was the elevator thing, the 50 Shades of Grey erotic tattooing of the rune.
That was where Dom wore my bounce.
That was classic. That's great foreplay, that tattooing, eh?
Oh, yeah. Well, the one thing I remember about that scene, and speaking of the collaboration of everyone on set, is, you know, when you're in an elevator, it's such a tight space. Dom had to wear my bounce at one point. They had to tape. Oh, do you remember that? They had to tape like a piece of white fabric to his chest.
Full service scene partner, baby.
Listen, it's true.
I'd do it again. Do it again.
Did we build that elevator or shoot in a real elevator? We built it, right?
No, it was both. In, because we disappear up through.
Oh, right, because we went up. You went up through the panel with your grand plan, exactly.
They don't let silly little actors do that.
Tattooing,
in real life.
You know, a little help, a little help. Yeah.
It's the Shadowhunter equivalent to dropping the handkerchief.
Was it a disappearing rune? What was the rune?
It was a Nyx rune. It was night vision, being able to see in the dark.
Oh, night vision rune. Yeah.
I have to say, your memory of the show has been pretty impeccable. Like, all of the details you remembered, we have struggled with that. We've gone through it and been like, oh, that's right, this is when this happens, and X, Y, and Z, and had to sort of place it all together. But you seem to have remembered every little detail, which is pretty damn impressive.
That's astounding.
Well, it was very traumatizing at the time, so it sticks with me.
Yeah,
this is just therapy. Your, this is therapy
didn't
for you.
To push that out.
No, no. In full disclosure, when I knew I was going to be doing this, I scanned a couple. I did a rewind. Yeah, but still, it was. I remembered a lot of it because, like, there was some kind of big stuff. Like that stuff on the boat was wild, and
we went back to that boat too.
We went back
so
to
many
that boat
times.
A few times.
Oh,
talking about thunderstorms. Nothing like a thunderstorm coming in from the deep lake and you can see the clouds encroaching and you're stood on a giant fucking steel conductor just
on
thinking
water.
Cover.
This is all going to die at some point. Yeah. Here we go. This is great. yeah, we went back to that boat and then we went into the bowels of the boat and had a huge fight scene in the bowels of the boat. But
with
it
Dom
was
and Alan.
Like 35, 36 degrees in our leather jackets and I had this sweater that I hated and we were just
dodging
like
sweat.
Ripping.
The sweat was flying. I was like dodging puddles.
Right. In the dodging rune now.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I did my bit on the boat. That drone shot, I said, this has got to be the last shot of the season.
Yeah.
And it worked
out really, really nicely. Yeah. I thought that show was really good and you know, both action wise and character wise. Yeah, and I was also the other funny thing about Kat with you, which is a nice little character moment, waking up in bed with Simon. That whole thing
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Remember that where he sees you and Simon, aren't you going to ask me? When are you going to ask me to be your girlfriend?
Yeah.
And that was just so much fun because it was like a completely different thing for you. I remember having fun with that too. Yeah. Not
See,
so much
my...
fun for Simon at the end of the day.
No, poor
guy.
Simon. Simon went through it all of the seasons.
Yeah.
He ended up, Alberto, who played
Spoiler.
Simon, ended up falling in love and getting engaged to his co-star from season 3.
He met his fiance on the show.
Oh, wow. Who is her?
The lovely Tessa Mossy. She played Heidi.
Oh, fantastic. Well, that is a happy ending. Yeah. Yeah, it was such a great cast. And Harry's gone on to great things. And, of course, Isaiah, who never gave me my bottle of Old Spice that he said he was going to come through with.
So rude.
Yeah. No. I thought I sort of rated a gift pack of some kind. But no. You know, I mean, I feel like our episodes led to him being in it.
Oh,
so.
Absolutely.
Very much
nothing.
So, yeah.
Zip.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Crickets from Isaiah.
Man.
Oh, man alive. That's great.
Well, Miles, it has been absolutely so lovely having you on the show and reconnecting. You were such a huge part of the show and a huge part of season one. And it's been an honor and a pleasure.
Yeah, well, I miss you guys after having done this. Take me on one of those fan things sometimes. I'll go and I'll get you coffee.
Bad idea. Yeah.
I'm pretty good on a panel. I can handle a panel.
Yeah.
Well, look, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it. I had a great time. I got to say, like, nothing but fond memories.
Yes, such
and,
a pleasure.
And, I hope it was for you too. And I'll tell you what, I mean, Kat, I'm in LA pretty often, so next time I come, let me take you for lunch, and it would be nice to just see your smiling face in person.
I would absolutely love that.
I'm not often in London, but when I come, I'm coming for you.
And I'm excited to see Nightmare Alley. Can't wait.
Really see it. Come on, guys. Show a brother some love here.
My girlfriend is in LA. So we're, you know, obviously long distance for the time being, and we have like movie date nights. And it's on our movie date night list, but I can't sit down. Like right now, it's almost 10 o'clock and I'm like, perfect. So let's watch a movie. And I scroll through and I'm like, can't. I've promised her that we're going to watch that one together.
I'll call her. I'll give you the hall pass.
Yeah. Could you? Thank you.
It's not entirely romantic. Like what I might suggest a few episodes of my series, Sex Life, instead, if you're looking for a date night movie. It's pretty popular with the ladies.
Great.
Well, there you go.
Perfect. I'm super excited about it.
All right, kids.
Well, let's hope that this is not the last time our paths cross on and off set, because I know we'd certainly love to work with you again. So thank you for being here.
Back at you, guys. All right. Love you guys.
Return to the Shadows is hosted and executive produced by me, Dominic Sherwood, and Catherine McNamara. Our executive producer is Ling Lee. Our senior producers are Liz Hayes and Diego Tapia. And our producers are Hannah Harris and Kristen Vermilia. Original music by Alex Kinsey, performed by Alex Kinsey and Catherine McNamara.
A lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.